I'd like to call this meeting of the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 8:04 on Thursday, February 21st, 2008. Let the record reflect that there is a quorum. With us is Representative Dahlstrom, Representative Salmon, Co-Chair Fairclough, and myself, Co-Chair Gabrielle Ledoux. Our agenda for this morning is the second hearing for HB 327. I had previously closed public testimony on this, but seeing that there are a number of people in the audience that are here to testify, I am going to reopen public testimony. So the first person who is signed up, and incidentally, is there anybody online? All right, thank you. Is George Gatter. George, please come up and identify yourself for the record.
George Gatter, Kodiak.
And who are you with?
I'm with Tony's Bar, which I recently purchased. So I've recently moved from rural Alaska, a small village outside of Kodiak, and I've moved into a larger community to pursue my business. So I'm here to give my thoughts on this bill. Having been in rural Alaska on and off for the last 25 years and living in a rural community full-time for the last 10 years, I can see, I think I can give a little inside look at this proposal. My opinion is, rather than imposing stiffer fines and criminalizing people in the hospitality industry, I believe we can do a lot more good if we strengthen our rural enforcement, such as the VPSO program, which the community I lived in, right now they have not had a VPSO for 4 months. So actually it's a lawless town right now, so it's pretty tough. The troopers come out once a month. But I would like to see, I mean, the whole bootlegger issue we could solve with reinforcing our VPSO program and strengthening our trooper program is what I would like to see, rather than going back and imposing these huge fines and felonies to the people of the hospitality industry. I think it's that's basically all I have to say this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Gatter? And let the record reflect also that Representative Olson has joined us. All right. Thank you very much. The second person is Dale Fox. Dale, please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning. My name is Dale Fox, and I'm the president and CEO of Alaska Char. Alaska Char represents hotels, restaurants, and bars, liquor stores all across our state. We'd like to provide some comments on HB 327, and I'd like to thank the committee for the opportunity to express our thoughts. I'll address the issues sequentially as they come up in the bill so you can follow along. On page 2 of the bill, the bill suggests that plastic containers can no longer be used to ship to rural Alaska. Bootleggers, who are already breaking the law, will not pay attention to this new rule. So the comments that this will stop bootlegging don't ring true. Law-abiding consumers in damp communities will have to pay more because glass is heavier. Therefore, this is just an additional tax on rural Alaskans who want to buy alcohol and have it shipped. The provisions of the bill get worse every couple of pages. On page 3, the bill suggests that if any member of an establishment's staff makes a mistake, that the establishment must be closed. We believe this is unreasonable. Imagine if you owned a restaurant and bar with 50 employees, and if one person makes a mistake, everybody loses their job for 45 days. As an owner, your profits for the year are gone. Your employees who don't have the cash to wait for the suspension have to find new jobs. And your customers leave. It's virtually the death penalty for the business. Let's look at page 5. It makes it a felony to make two mistakes within 10 years shipping alcohol. This parallels an existing rule that makes it a felony for a bartender to make two mistakes reading IDs and serving minors in their life. Doesn't seem reasonable to me to turn clerical errors into a felony. Let's take an example. If you work at a liquor store and somebody orders 6 liters of spirit alcohol, if you do the process right, you check the state database and find out if he's ordered alcohol from another establishment. Assume for a moment he's ordered 5 liters from another establishment. If you make the mistake of sending him that 6-liter order, you're on your way to being a felon. A clerical mistake. And if that's your job and you process thousands of orders, making 2 mistakes in a 10-year period is possible. So like the waiters and waitresses who are getting threatened with a felon for their second mistake, people are leaving the industry. People are saying, it's not worth it. I'm not going to be a felon for misreading something. No other profession is singled out for such harsh penalties. Recently at my office, we learned about a 20-year-old who got an ID from the DMV using somebody else's passport that showed that they were 21. They actually came and took a TAM class using that ID, the legitimate state ID. And the trooper called us to let us know to erase that. You know, we don't punish the state worker who works at the DMV and make them a felon. And nor should we. And nor should we make people felons for making clerical mistakes in the hospitality industry. Turning to page 7 of the same bill, the authors want to charge the shipping clerk who makes the mistake of sending 6 liters of alcohol, in my example earlier, with manslaughter if a death results. Now, the authors will tell you this is a bootlegging bill, but that's not if you read the section, it includes shipping. And so the clerk that makes the mistake that I suggested of shipping 6 bottles when he should have shipped 5 could be charged with manslaughter. We understand some of our opponents believe that any mistake should result in penalties where businesses close, employees are forced on welfare, profits are lost, and when all else fails, our opponents would like to see people leave the industry. That's why we're here to appeal to you, our citizen legislators, for reasonable rules. Imagine your adult child working as a waiter or waitress where they make a math error and serve an underage sting agent. Should there be penalties? Yes, there should. But should they be made a felon? Most parents would suggest to their adult child that they change careers if they made 1 mistake for fear of making a 2nd mistake and being a felon. Imagine your constituent who's made an honest living by working very hard to provide good food and beverage. Do you really think that closing his business and taking away his profits for the year is the right thing to do for one of his staff making the mistake? Imagine your adult child, our nephew, our niece, working in the shipping department of a liquor store, going to jail for manslaughter because they made a clerical error. This bill needs major revisions to meet the needs of all Alaskans, and we trust that your good judgment will be used to improve the bill. Char is willing to work with you and your staff as you develop reasonable alternatives. We don't believe that this bill is reasonable as written.
Thank you. Anybody have any questions for Mr. Fox? Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Fox, for your testimony. Have you had any conversations or work meetings with the administration?
Actually, that's one of the things that we were frustrated with as this bill came forward. Normally, and as you know, as legislators, we ask people that are putting bills together that relate to our industry to run those by us and get our comments. We ask that as a courtesy. One of the things that we believe is no legislator, no administration would develop a new electrical code without talking to an electrician. No legislator, no administration would develop a new plumbing code without talking to a plumber. The first we hear about this bill is when it was filed. And so this is our opportunity to correct those problems.
Follow up?
And certainly.
So since then, since you have heard about it, have you talked to anyone from public safety? Or have you?
No.
While your group is here, are you attempting to talk to the administration?
We have not. No.
Thank you.
Any further questions? And let the record reflect that Representative Cisna has joined us. Representative Fairclough.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just for the record, I have distributed to my colleagues on the committee an amendment that would delete one of the issues that your testimony brought forward. And because we're reopened in public testimony, it's not an appropriate time to offer the amendment. But what the amendment would do, and I'd like you to speak to at least that one component of your disagreement with what's being proposed, is on the closing of an establishment. I did meet with the administration on this bill and was concerned and was asking where the particular recommendation came from. And as I understand it, they were looking at the success that we have for reduced youth smoking and the actions that have happened in tobacco. And so looking at that, they proposed the closure as an alternative to help rural Alaska and to help all Alaskans to deter underage drinking and many things associated with alcohol. The stiffer penalty, from their perspective, had worked with smoking. We should do it there. My argument was that in smoking, that it was an individual product that was removed from the store for the closure, that they were not allowed to sell that particular product versus closing the entire store. And I'm not sure if the administration... Ms. Carpinetti, does the administration, will they have an opinion on my amendment?
Yes.
I don't know if the administration supports my amendment or not.
Would you like me to come up with a position now or later?
I think it probably would be appropriate to do it after the public testimony. Thank you.
So I'm trying to work with them. And what I've done is delete the closure and put in some... they weren't comfortable with how harsh I thought the penalty should be as the trade-off, but recognizing that they were seeking to make a difference that was meaningful, instead of $500 on page 4, line 13 for a first offense, and I'll let you catch up with me so that you see where I'm proposing the changes. Are you there, Mr. Fox?
Which line?
13.
Oh, thank you. Sorry.
So under a first offense, instead of $500, it would be $2,500, but the closure is gone. On page 4, line 15, suspend license for a period of 7 days, and that's, I believe, on a second offense, move the $1,000 to $5,000. Then on line 18, I believe that's the third offense, suspend the license for a period of 30 days, and move the fine from $2,000 to $10,000. Anyway, that's it in a nutshell. Again, I just want those of you who are getting ready to testify that issue, I will propose that to the committee. I don't know whether that will pass or not. I don't know if the administration is in support of it, but I did work with them in deference to understanding that closure could severely harm and eliminate a business with that type of closure. And we couldn't particularly limit a product in a in a wholesaler's department or not. It would be too difficult to monitor that. So the fines are an alternate to that. So if you could speak to that briefly.
You know, the challenge with particularly the underage issue is we put 100% or virtually 100%, 95% of our enforcement effort against 7% of the problem. We know, the Council on Alcohol knows, everybody knows that very little alcohol is coming from retail establishments for that minors consume. In fact, national surveys show 65% of alcohol consumed by minors comes from their parents' liquor cabinet. Shoulder taps, internet buys. There's a whole slew of places, and they've determined that about 7% of alcohol sales come from minors fooling the bartender or fooling the clerk. So right now, part of the frustration you'll hear from many other industry members with any sort of increase in fines or penalties or felonies is that they feel like they're a minor part of the problem and they're working on solving that problem, but the whole force of the state is coming down upon them. I mean, so there's the thought process that when all the enforcement is focused on retailers, it's inevitable that, of course, you're going to catch somebody making a mistake sometime.
Madam Chair, let me make the question much more brief. Do you favor closure or fines?
Well, I think fines would be preferred.
I'm just trying to address one of the components. I understand that you might disagree with how I address it. There are several other amendments that I'm offering. It's come to our attention as a committee. Last time we spoke that people are allowed to come to work without TAM cards. So we could have someone serving alcohol that really doesn't understand the rules surrounding it. You have 30 days for them to get their TAM card. I have an amendment that proposes to eliminate that they have to have the TAM card before they serve. So just so that everyone's aware, I don't want to take anyone off guard here. And then another thing that came to my attention during the work session with the administration was that currently, people who are serving beverages are allowed to consume alcohol on premise when they're serving, and I propose to take that away. How can they judge whether someone else is sober or not if they're allowed to drink while they're having to assess someone's? So that, I believe, covers the three. I'm looking at the administration to make sure I've gotten the bulk of what I'm proposing once the public testimony closes. So if anyone wants to speak to those, it will be on the table. And I don't know, is there any way that we can provide this to those in the audience who might want to review it beforehand? There's some out at the out on the table. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And is Mr. Fox, is that understanding correct, that people are allowed to consume on the premises while they're serving?
Different organizations have different policies.
It's not under state statute.
But there's no state statute that you're aware of that prohibits it. All right, thank you. Any further questions for Mr. Fox? Thanks very much. Next on the list is Gary Superman.
Thank you. I'll attempt to put a little bit of a different twist on this from Dale. I think he's hit most of our concerns with the bill. First of all, let me say that I came into this business not by choice, but by chance. My wife and I received our business through an estate. I had been in her family for 30 years. Our establishment now had been in the family for 30 years. So we took it over and we redid the business. I tore down the existing motel. We have a motel, a bar, and a liquor store. Put basically our life savings into the business. Everything we have is wrapped up in our business. It is essentially a mom-and-pop operation, and it's our retirement. At the present time, we do, as a number of establishments that, in fact, most of the establishments on the peninsula, and I happen to be the president of the Kenai Peninsula Char Organization, an affiliate of the state char. Every establishment I know does community work, does fundraisers, sells pull tabs for different nonprofit organizations. My establishment happens to sell for the American Legion and also for the Nikiski seniors in the community that I live in. I think what I'm trying to say that a 45-day closure for my establishment, and there is a misconception out there amongst the public that somehow we in this business are all getting rich, is very, very far from the truth. A 45-day closure would put me out of business. The margins are simply not there. I think my margins essentially for the past few years have been about 7% of my gross. And we are not crowded all the time. As I said, we live in a rural area. and that even that 7% has gone down here in the last year with the rise in utilities, with the rise in the taxes, the rise in insurance rates. It's a very, very difficult business to maintain for a small operation. So these closures would, without a doubt in my mind, put us out of business. Even some of the fines, I think, to comment on them, would make it extremely hard for us. In the past going on 15 years since we've had our establishment, we've had one citation for selling to a minor. That was brought about through a sting from a new employee that we had. She had to pay the $500 fine. We haven't had one since. If I had another new bartender, and fortunately we're able to keep our bartenders, most of mine have been there for a number of years. I've had a bartender for over 20 years that has been in the family. Most of mine are 5 to 10 year employees, so it's a good place to work for them, and they make a fairly decent living there. If I had to bring on a new bartender who made the mistake, and everybody makes mistakes, there is, I think, a percentage of human error in all of our endeavors. And I think that these types of punitive actions that are aimed at us, who are legitimate businesses, who actually are in a business that society demands that they is available to them for a service, are being punished, excessively punished. And I'd just like to say that this bill, in my mind, is basically a reflection of what has happened in our association, in our trade, in our business, the last few years since the ABC was transferred over to public safety. There's been a change of philosophy over there, I think, that has been 180 degrees, very draconian. The frequency of stings is at times unbelievable. And the methodology of the stings is very untenable at times. I can comment on the technicalities, and I think the others will too, but I see the bill basically as a move toward enforcement, as more of an adoption of the idea somehow that we are part of the criminal element and that we need to be punished through punitive action. And I am adamantly opposed to the movement of this bill. I think that about wraps it up for me.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Superman? Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you tell me your name again and then the name of your establishment and how many people it seats?
My name is Gary Superman. My wife and I own the Hunger Hut Bar, motel, and liquor store in Nikiski. We seat 50 people.
Thank you.
Representative Olson.
Gary, could you give us a couple examples of recent stings?
Well, primarily they'll come to, and I have a walk-up window. The troopers will send an underage person into the walk-up. And they generally try, it's been what's been related to me from the bartenders, generally try to do it during shift changes. When there's quite a bit going on, the bartenders are changing out their tills. And I know that was what happened in the episode that the new bartender had received a violation. But they'll just generally come into the window, try to buy with a kid. And lots of times the kid, they don't look like kids. I know the last several times they've come to the window, the door remains open to the walk-up. And by gosh, my bartenders are so familiar with the process that they basically tell them, you're kidding. They don't even have to ask them for their ID because they can see the car sitting right out the doorway. So they're very alert. They know they're going to lose their jobs from here on in after the last time that we were cited at my establishment, and it hasn't happened again. Because we as owners will take those draconian measures on our employees.
Thank you. Further questions? Thanks, Mr. Superman. Next up is Duran Powell.
Hi. My name's Duran Powell, and I'm with Anchorage Char, and I'm also I'm the general manager at Chilkee Charlie's in Anchorage. And looking at the bill, the fines and the structured closures are the structured closures are the things that affect us the most. We run a high volume operation in town. We last year arrested over it was real close to it was 98 minors. We arrested ourselves and turned those minors over to APD for prosecution. And we had a doorman fail a minor sting. And we don't get credit for those 100 arrests. We would be closed under the structured closure just the same as someone that had intentionally served a minor. And it's frustrating, but we employ humans. We employ about 110 of them. And with the volume that we do, we had about 1 million transactions last year. And we can promise to fire the employee that fails a minor sting. We can have training weekly. We have our TAM cards. We were one of the first places to fully TAM our entire crew before it was legal or before it was required by the law. Everyone knows we're real serious about it. We would terminate an employee and have terminated employees that knew a minor had been on the premises and they didn't tell us. A young girl that had a perfectly good fake ID and they knew about it and didn't say anything. And so we found out about it later and fired them. If we find out someone comes in and they're celebrating their 21st birthday and we know they've been in the bar prior to that with a fake ID, we 86 them for a year. I mean, we punish minors for taking runs at us like that. And still, I can say, with 120 employees and having 1 million transactions a year serving alcohol, sooner or later, someone's going to fail. When we had a doorman fail, we reviewed the videotape at the front door. The girl walks in with a minor dependent ID that has the date of issue right next to the date of her birth. He looks her in the face, he smiles, greets her, looks down, looks at the ID and studies it, just like he's supposed to, flips it over, looks at the date, and hands it back to her and says, "Welcome to Coots." And she walked in, and she was underage. The ID was an obscure form of ID that he didn't recognize. He didn't slow down and look at it, and he failed. It's frustrating when you deal with situations like that when people just make a mistake. But that's what happens. People make mistakes. And if we were to catch one or two of these citations, I can say with certainty if we had a two-week closure, we would be in financial distress to the point of it would jeopardize the entire operation that had been there for 40 years. It's draconian. And to lock it into law, it makes it worse.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Fairclough.
Welcome. Thank you for coming down. Could you comment on ATM cards needing to be in place before people go to work?
We as an operational point, we do that as a point of our operation. I think the reason that it's not part of the policy now statewide is some of the smaller villages and smaller places across the state, they just, if someone calls in sick, you wind up using your cousin to come in and help you cover a shift. You can't just have someone run down and get a TAM card real fast. In Anchorage, it's available to us to, within a couple of days, get someone a TAM card to take the class and get their card in their hand. I think in the smaller villages, I don't think that's that fast or that available to them. I think that's the problem.
Thank you. Further questions? Thank you very much, Representative Faircloth.
Thank you. Do you have a policy on allowing your servers to drink?
We don't. We don't allow them to drink.
That is your policy?
Yeah, that's our house policy.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next is Annie Neubauer.
No, I didn't sign up.
Oh, okay. All right. And Jody Benashi, you didn't sign up either. Doug Griffin is just for questions. Andy Lundquist.
My name is Andy Lundquist. I'm from Kodiak. I've owned a bar and a liquor store on that island for 25 years. I'm currently on the board of Kodiak Char. I appreciate the opportunity to come and talk to you on this bill. I pretty much agree with everything Dale said, that the bill is draconian. It criminalizes a lot of our people kind of needlessly. I think the penalties are excessive. I agree with Duran that, a lot of us in the industry have worked for years on a proactive basis to stop underage drinking. I mean, we don't, it's not part of any of our business plans to serve kids. This problem with the bootleggers is a statewide problem that we all want to solve. George Gatter alluded to the fact that the village safety office people, maybe some more trooper presence, would go a lot farther than what we're after here. But I guess what bothers me worse than anything is at the end of the day, you pass this thing, we haven't solved a problem. We're still going to have bootlegging. We're still going to have underage kids getting liquor for the reasons that have been stated here. I mean, most of this, a lot of this stuff, maybe they bought it at our place, but there's so many ways around this thing. And for you to just look at us, heap all the penalties on us and say, we're going to fix this thing, is, it's just not there. When Dale says that 70% of the alcohol is coming from the family, and maybe 7% of it's coming out of the retail businesses, and we're putting all our enforcement thing in on that 7%, I mean, something's the matter here. And you can put the death penalty on this thing if you want. And I mean, it's still not going to solve it. I just sold my business right now after 25 years, and one of the big reasons was bills like this. It's just not right. I mean, we need a atmosphere in a state where, promote small business. I employed 20, 25 people down there, college kids in the summer, whatever. These people aren't criminals. I have a CPA background. I really resent this. So that's my main point on the amendment that you're offering for TAM cards. Duran hit it on the head. In the rural Alaska, in Anchorage, they probably offer a TAM card, a TAM course every day. Down on our island, we have a hard time getting a guy to teach it once a month. And we have a hard time getting help. I mean, it's just incredible. You know, I guess it's part of our, what kind of wages we're offering, or maybe some of it's stuff like this. I don't want to take the risk of becoming a felon or something like that, but they just, it's hard to get good help. It's hard to get good help in a short time with a TAMP card. So I would hope we had some flexibility, at least for the rural areas. On that drinking on the job, my experience is most businesses prohibit it for their bartenders and their cocktail waitresses. I know I did. But one, you know, it's like anything else, it's unintended consequences. How about the owner? I mean, when you walk into your own bar, you're on the job. You're telling me that I can't have a drink in my own bar. I you know, that's pretty tough. You know, so I appreciate your help on this thing. I'd like to see this bill sent back to the governor's office. I know that that's not politically comfortable, but we would like to have some input on this thing. Char, we've got a lot of people that have spent years and years in this business, and we could come up with some good ideas. You want to solve bootlegging? Let's solve it. Let's go after these guys. I talked to somebody in the, I won't name his name, but in the administration that says, we know who these bootleggers are. I said, well, you know who they are. Make a case against them. Well, it's kind of like the mafia. You can't get anybody to, you know, they're all related. They don't want to testify against each other and this kind of stuff. That's not our baby. You know, if you want to stop bootlegging, let's go down, identify these guys, put a sting operation on them, put them out of business, prosecute them. You got three policemen in the town of Bethel. You know, is that adequate law enforcement? I don't believe so. You know, and a lot of these villages don't have the village safety people. And so, I mean, that one would be a good one. And we all have to grapple with this underage kid thing. But, you know, it's it takes us all working together, not just throw some felony provisions on this thing. Thank you.
Thank you, Andy. Representative Fairclough.
Madam Chair, Andy, this is your opportunity to tell us what we can do to make this proposed change to law different. So I appreciate that you're here and that we have the bill in front of us so that we can do that. But I heard some feedback from our conversation with the Boundary Commission that some people thought that that was valuable. And I understand that we're not moving the bill today, that the amendments that I've proposed, people may want to have a conversation about, vote up or down, and then sit back and cogitate on the impact of what we're proposing, as well as the public testimony that we've just heard. But I'm wondering, alcohol is an issue in the state of Alaska. The administration has acknowledged that that's an issue and is making their best effort, along with our alcohol control board, to make recommendations on what they believe is best for Alaska in this controlled substance. The bottom line is it's a controlled substance. It's not regulated. Well, it's almost regulated like a pharmacy, but and so I was wondering if the chair thought it would be valuable at all to have a work session on the particular points, because I hear what you said, and I certainly would take into account the issue with TAM cards with rural Alaska. But the bottom line is, in Anchorage or anywhere else where there's a high volume of turnover, a million transactions, the people that are handling those million transactions have already recognized that it's a good policy to make sure people are trained before they're there. So I'm certainly willing to hear the issues and understand the vantage point of a business owner. I've ran a million-dollar retail organization, so I understand cause and effect and impact to closure. So I really would like an opportunity to make it better and still support the administration in their efforts to try to attack this issue that is attacking Alaskans. So I don't know if we could talk about that later, Madam Chair, or if the committee members want to comment whether that would be a good idea or not, but I appreciate a dialogue where we can all talk with each other versus a person that's on the spot trying to, in their 3 minutes, answer, you know, things that impact their livelihood and their business. So anyway, for your consideration, Madam Chair.
I for one, think it's a great idea. I think that the meeting that we had with the Boundary Commission was one of the best meetings that we've had in this committee. It was actually a work session and a dialogue. And so if the committee is in agreement, I would really like to schedule that. Do you have a comment, Representative?
Yes, to that point. And on the TAM card, we have the same problem with rural Alaska and huge numbers of other areas, the training issue. And we have more and more connectivity and opportunities, and very possibly some of these people might be able to help us figure out a way to make sure that, since they're working in communities that are that have those opportunities, we might help lots of other people build training programs too. So yeah, I'm there.
What I'd sort of like to do is get the schedules of some people, and maybe we could have a representative from CHAR here and a representative from the AG's office, and all sit down and talk.
Madam Chair, and if we could have a representative, if your office is going to coordinate, our office coordinated, I believe, the issue on the local boundary commission. But if we're doing that, we should have a representative from the Alcohol Control Board as well as public safety, probably at the table. I appreciated that we were able to actually dialogue versus testimony goes, so that we could have a two-way conversation. The other thing that I would be interested in, I believe CHAR in the past has talked about an online TAM availability. Just so everyone knows, full disclosure, when I was elected on the Anchorage Assembly, because alcohol issues were going to be a major component of what came before me, I went and took the TAM test. So believe me, if I can pass it, most people can pass it. And I mean that with no disrespect to anyone else, just I get test anxiety. So writing my Social Security number down on a test is difficult for me. But maybe there's something online that CHAR could do for the rural communities, or propose something that has some kind of a teacher to administer that particular program, so we know the right person took it. But there are ways to address the issues to make sure that people are knowledgeable before they go there. And that's what I'd like to see in a dialogue, Madam Chair, and with all due respect to the industry that's impacted by this and the administration who believes this issue has come. It's time. It's time that we take it on.
Thank you. Representative Olson.
It might be helpful to have somebody representing the interests of the BPSO program here, too, because so much of this bill applies to the rural communities.
Good idea. Representative Dostrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just for the record, I would like you to know that I have been having ongoing conversations with several people on the ABC board, public safety, and some bar owners around the state concerning the electronic TAMS testing and some concerns that I have with that. So,
good share.
I think that's an appropriate venue to vet all of those issues too.
And if anybody else has any suggestions, Representative Salmon?
I don't have any suggestions, but I think we should the committee of next referral, I think is I think a lot of that is going to stop that one. If you know, I mean, the person is, you know, into the business, so I don't think any of their concerns is going to be I think all that is going to wash out after it does go through that the committee of next referral. It probably will have to go back to the governor's office.
Thank you. Representative Olson.
I'd like to see an invitation offered to Representative Jewell to participate in the program, mm-hmm. or in the workshop.
And if anybody thinks of anybody else after this meeting, then just bring that to the attention of my office. Representative Fairclough?
And again, I just hate to delay things and not know when those are at, so I'm wondering if the I know everyone doesn't have their calendars, but I'm looking at March 4th, which would give us a full week. Representative Ledoux, do you think that's far enough out, or the 6th would actually give us 2 weeks out so that we could invite people? Everyone will not be able to come, and I don't think that we should wait for everyone to be available to come. And actually, I won't be here on the 6th.
All right, let's do it March 4th. Let's schedule it for March 4th, then.
Thank you.
Thank you. So is there any, doesn't look like there's anybody else signed up for testimony. Is there anybody, Ms. Carbonetti?
Madam Chair, I'd just like a moment to respond to some of the comments that were made.
Certainly.
I think there are some errors in reading the bill that I would just like to clear up. And I'll try and keep it short.
Okay. Could you identify yourself for the record?
My name is Annie Carpinetti, and I represent the Department of Law. And I will also say that I'm always open, and the administration is always open to hear comments from other sides. I haven't gotten a call or I haven't gotten any comments myself. But I do represent the ABC board, too. So I hear comments, and I deal with members of industry. And I know a lot of fine operators in the state, and I'm always... My office is always open to people for their comments. But this is, alcohol is not like a grocery store, a business that runs a grocery store. They're licensed by the state to sell and make a profit from a potentially lethal substance. I drink alcohol. I'm not opposed to alcohol. It just makes sense that for the problems of alcoholism we have in our state, to address it in every way we can. And the survey that has been quoted here was run by the industry. I'm not sure that it's accurate, but you know, there are other places where youth get alcohol, and those are certainly places that we must address, but it also makes sense to address it through bars and through other areas where kids can get alcohol. The reason for consequences to the owner of a bar is because the owner of any business sets the tone about how their employees and agents are going to deal with selling alcohol or selling groceries or whatever. And the tobacco enforcement experience has shown clearly that when there are some consequences to the owner of the bar, tobacco sales go way down. So that it is clear that the agents and employees are paying more attention to who they are selling tobacco to. And that is the reason why the study group this summer from Health and Social Services suggested that they have adopt similar or sanctions or some consequences on the owner of a bar for their employees selling. Just a few comments about some of the things that were said that I think are mistaken. The bill does not adopt felonies for the hospitality industry, unless you consider a bootlegger a member of the hospitality industry, which I don't think anybody does. It adopts a felony for a third-time conviction for a bootlegger. It doesn't adopt any additional crimes on members of the industry. In terms of plastic, prohibiting sending alcohol to local option communities in plastic, law enforcement has said that will help them enforce the bootlegging laws. In terms of the manslaughter provision in here, that does not subject a person who is a clerk who makes a mistake to being prosecuted for manslaughter. This is selling without a license in a local option area, and the alcohol the person is selling is a direct cause of death of another person. This is not a clerk in Anchorage who's sending alcohol by mistake in response to written order. In terms of the stings, I think it would be really good to have somebody from the ABC board and the troopers to describe the stings that they do, because they don't go at shift change times. They go with children, juveniles who look like juveniles, and I've heard this at the ABC board. We see the photographs of the kids who do the stings. They don't look like they're adults. They look like they're children, and they're So the intent is not to fool people by sending a, you know, a luridly dressed young person that looks older than 21. They send people who look like 18, 17, 16-year-old kids.
Ms. Carpenetti?
Yes.
Does the ABC board keep pictures of all of the individuals who have been involved in the sting operations?
They have. Their photographs of the people who were involved in the sting are part of the investigative folder that goes to the courts. And yes, I think we do have photographs of the kids who do these stings. And they use their own driver's license. They don't use fake ID.
Would you be able to bring the photographs to the work session? How many of them would there be?
If we can do it, we'll do it.
I'll have to double check. I think that it would be something that's in the public record. I will have to look into it, but I don't see why we couldn't bring some examples at least.
The minors and confidentiality.
Yeah, I was wondering about
kind of woo.
but you know, the least we could do is have the trooper who's in charge of these things describe his efforts, and it's not to, you know, bamboozle people. It's to check on whether people are following the law, and that's how we do that. That's how law enforcement finds out whether people are following the law. They do enforcement, and that did happen when the ABC board was moved to the Department of Public Safety, and for good reason. Anyway, if there are any questions about the comments that were made, I'd love to answer them. But I think there's this bill does not make it a felony for a clerk in Anchorage to send alcohol in response to a written order. It makes a felony. It adopts a felony for a third time within a 10-year period, bootlegger, to do so. And it's already a felony to bootleg certain amounts of alcohol into a local option area anyway. Thank you.
Any further questions? At ease for a moment. In the audience who would like to testify? Is there anybody online that would like to testify? All right, then I will now close public hearing for the second time. As I mentioned earlier, we don't intend to move this bill out of committee today, and we will be having a work session on March 4th, which will be coordinated through my office. Is there any further discussion from committee on this at the moment? Ms. Fairclough.
Thank you. Madam Chair, the brief at ease was talking about my amendments just for those at home and committee members, and I'm not offering those at the time because someone from the public has commented, as we would hope would do, on some of the challenges with what's being proposed, and so I'm happy to acknowledge that two heads are better than one and that three are better than that, and our full committee might be able to massage my proposals to more meet what the industry needs and hold people accountable for doing the right thing. So as an example, the TAM card, understanding that there's a rural component that needs to be addressed, I may want to change the verbiage on making sure that can fit the entire state versus just an urban area. Thank you.
So is there any other comments about this bill at this time? Any other further matters that the committee wants to enter into? All right, I will close this committee meeting. It is about 5 minutes to 9:00.